and welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related, and I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we've got a great show for you today. We're going to be diving into so many different things. Our data breaches of the week is going to be like the longest ever that we've done here. We're going to be talking about news from Amazon and Facebook and Google and AT&T and a whole bunch of other stuff. Our deep dive is going to be diving hard into new privacy for DNA and why basically that is an illusion at this point and what we can do about it. Stick around. It's going to be an awesome hour. And as always, we're going to start with the news. And in smart home news device, and this is specifically Amazon, but apparently all of them are doing this, Amazon has been asking for, thanks to the Amazon Echo, that is their smart home device, and Google's got Home, and Apple's got whatever the heck they call theirs. I can never remember the name of that for the life of me. Facebook has Portal, but we're talking specifically, I think, right now about Amazon, as they were featured prominently in the news articles I read about this. As you know, these companies data mine to the nth degree, and I've mentioned that ad nauseum, so I'm not really going to talk about that per se, but they are taking it to another level that we haven't necessarily seen. And what a lot of people don't realize is that, let's say you have an Amazon Echo that runs your, you know, your home. It runs your smart devices. So let's say you have a lamp in your living room and shades and other devices that are linked in and plugged into this. So you can say, you know, Amazon Echo, and I won't use the trigger word, but let's say Echo, you know, turn on my living room light, and then a second later, your light turns on. Amazon actually records that. Amazon records when you turn your lights on and off. Every time you turn it on, you turn it off, it records, now that they own Ring Doorbell, it records the smart doorbell that integrates with this. So every time your door rings or the video that you've got on this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But Amazon is now taking it one step further. They have reached out to various makers like Logitech, who makes a lot of these devices, and Hunter Fans, who makes like fans that integrate with the Amazon Echo platform, and said that even if, let's say you go and you manually turn your light on. So instead of saying, you know, Amazon Echo, turn on my living room light, let's say you go and you flip the light on. Or let's say you go and you manually turn the lock in your door as opposed to using your Echo to do that. They want to know when you do that. And they want to know when you do that because they want a complete picture of how you're using those devices. So perfect example. Let's say every night, you know, you go upstairs to bed and, you know, you turn off your lights at 10 p.m. every night. And if you go around manually turning them off, they want to know that. And then when you wake up in the morning, let's say you walk downstairs at, I don't know, 6 a.m. or whenever, and you turn your lights back on, they want to know that. Now they know your sleep habits. And so maybe they realize, oh, well, you know, they're going to bed at midnight and they're waking up at 4 a.m. They're only getting 4 hours of sleep. The recommended is 8 hours. So, you know, maybe we'll start advertising Ambien or, you know, another, you know, sleep aid service or something along those lines. Or they'll know if you lock and unlock your door. So maybe you perpetually forget to do this and unlock your door and then you turn off your lights. And maybe they're thinking, well, okay, the door's unlocked and you just turned off the lights at, you know, 10 o'clock. So maybe we'll just automatically lock the door for you at 11 because we know that you're, you know, you're forgetful. You know, but here's the thing. What if that data gets exposed? And we've seen problems with this. I reported before that Ring Doorbell had a massive problem of just letting their backend be unencrypted and wide open so that anybody could go ahead and look at Ring Doorbell information within the Ring Doorbell organization, which is a terrifying prospect. But now let's say that information gets out. Can hackers sell information and say, you know what, we know this person, we know this person's address, we know they go to bed at 10 because they turn off their lights, and we know they typically don't lock their door, and you know what, that information is worth $100, you know, whatever that is on the dark web. And so how are they securing that? How are they storing that? Why do they need that much information on us simply for having a smart home device? I mean, they already are updating or monitoring this and analyzing this to the nth degree. And it's to the point where the ones with video cameras on it, let's say it's the Echo Show or Facebook's Portal, they're integrating facial recognition into this. They're integrating voice recognition into this. But let's say you're walking around with a t-shirt for a band. I don't know, like let's say U2. Well, let's say U2 goes on tour and now you're getting basically advertisements for you too. You might have never ever mentioned them, but because you're wearing the shirt and it's got a video camera on it, it now has the ability to identify and recognize what you're running. Maybe you have one of these things in your kitchen and you have a nice knife set by a really good maker. Well, maybe they're going to start advertising you, let's say, quality cutting boards, you know, whatever that is. You have it in another room, it sees your kind of TV. Let's say it's a Samsung. So maybe they're going to advertise a Samsung Blu-ray player to you because they see you don't have one, and on and on and on. And where does it begin and where does it end? But I found that very interesting that Amazon would actually specifically ask, when we are manually doing things and not using the Echo, when the Echo could be doing it for us, to get a better picture on that. And so take it for what it's worth. I mean, if you have one of these devices, heads up on all of this, you may already know any of this and say, whatever, I'm more interested in getting access to quick information and recipes and timers and all this kind of stuff. Or maybe you're looking at this thinking, oh my God. But wherever you are on the spectrum, you know, you can't say you haven't been told. Let's put it that way. And so that is your Amazon news of the day. And in 5G news, and I think this is really interesting, if you're not familiar, most of us that have cell phones out there are on 4G, or specifically 4G LTE. And 5G, and I've mentioned on the radio show, is the next push for the new infrastructure for super fast wireless. It's going to solve, I think, a lot of different problems in this. But here's the thing. If you're an AT&T customer, you might have, and you might look on your phone, and your phone might say, instead of 4G, it might say 5GE. Now, this is something that AT&T has rolled out, I think, mostly nationwide, and 5G really isn't available, the actual 5G. So if I'm looking at Verizon, for example, I think they have five cities right now where they're piloting it in, where you can actually get 5G devices. And so if you're an AT&T customer, you see this and you think, oh, sweet, I just got upgraded to 5G and I didn't have to do anything. You may not necessarily know that in order to get 5G, you actually have to have equipment, meaning a cell phone or device, that is capable of accepting a 5G connection. So for example, I have a very new or very recent Android phone. It is 4G LTE. It does not have the hardware in it to accept a 5G connection. And so when I'm going to Verizon, for example, and wanting 5G, I have to get a new phone. And so you've got millions of AT&T customers out there that see 5GE and think, sweet, we're good. Not a problem. I'm on 5G, even though your phone can't actually take the technology. Now, this isn't the first time that AT&T has done this. When they were upgrading their 3G networks to 4G LTE, they started swapping people over with the symbol saying they're on 4G. And I can't remember if they did 4GE or they just said 4G. And AT&T has basically come out and said, our customers love it. They know we're getting ready for this. And basically they're saying we're just doubling the speed of our 4G network. And so they're enjoying a faster experience right now as we roll out our 5G. But a lot of people are confusing them or blaming them rather for deceptive practices. And Sprint went ahead and decided to sue them for this, basically saying you're giving false information that would, you know, people would kind of look at Sprint because we might have 5G faster than AT&T, but now they see 5G on their phone and they think we're good, no problem, and here we are. And so you tell me, is that a deceptive practice on AT&T's part, or is this just pure marketing and, you know, consumers should know better? Take it for what it's worth. I personally think it's a deceptive practice. I would rather know I'm on 4G with faster speed, like 4G times 2, 4G X2, something like that, as opposed to 5GE. But that is your AT&T slash, I guess, deceptive practices, you know, of news of the week, assuming you think it's deceptive practices. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And in Facebook privacy news, and I found this actually really interesting, and again, I think this is one of those ones that could probably be a deep dive, but basically, Facebook has their own security service. And that obviously makes sense. They've got a lot of facilities around the globe, and there are obviously a lot of people that are not satisfied with Facebook for privacy rights and all of that. I literally wrote an article called The Death of Facebook. But here's the interesting thing is that, like many security organizations, and I don't care if it's a local restaurant or somebody as big as Facebook, they have basically like a be on the lookout list for people that they believe might want to do actual harm to Facebook. So if you go on Facebook and say, yo, oh, Mark Zuckerberg, I'm going to shoot you on Tuesday, and then you walk into, like, let's say their facility on One Hacker Way in Silicon Valley, you know, they're going to flag you. You know, that's a serious problem because you're probably going to do, you know, intend to do harm. But we don't know where the line is. I mean, some people, I don't know, get drunk and blow off steam saying, you know, Facebook sucks and it should be burned to the ground. But, you know, they mean it metaphorically. They don't actually mean they're going to, you know, grab a can of gas and a match and go and do it. But by virtue of this, as people have threatened from, let's say, minor to very intricate detail, they get put on a be on the lookout list. But here's where it gets interesting, because Facebook has the ability, let's say they see somebody as an extreme threat, like, oh, I'm going to literally go down and, you know, if I say something like I'm going to, like, on a Tuesday go and burn down, you know, Facebook's facility, and I put this on Facebook, one, they're going to flag me, but two, they then have the ability to essentially turn on the app in my phone, get GPS monitoring for this, and know my location in real time. And so by virtue of it, they can then alert law enforcement to say, hey, you know what, this guy actually is in the vicinity of, you know, Facebook headquarters. And so, you know, he has publicly threatened this. And so what are you going to do about it? You know, and there were some cases where people were on this list, let's say, for speaking negatively of Facebook, and then showed up at Facebook to meet, let's say, a friend for lunch. This was literally one of the cases where Facebook basically detained the person. The security detained the person, wouldn't let them in because their facial recognition system, not to mention the GPS that literally has them geolocated, let's say, in the front lobby, you know, of the Facebook building, says, no, you can't come in. You're a threat. And so this opens up a bigger can of worms, I think, in the sense that we have a lot of companies that have a lot of access and a lot of telemetry on us. Facebook is one of them. Google is another. Apple is another. And so if you are deemed a threat or a problem, they can essentially become their own de facto law enforcement. And then without doing anything like a warrant, primarily because you've signed some kind of end user license agreement, just basically say, okay, well, this is a threat. And now we can literally track where our threats are in real time because they've got the Facebook app or Android or an iPhone or whatever, and on and on and on. You know, and I have been, you know, both complimentary and critical, let's say, to Facebook and Google and Apple, et cetera, depending on the situation. And so am I on one of these lists? You know, is my Android being tracked by Google at all times? Is my, you know, the Facebook app on my phone tracking me to Facebook, you know, above and beyond just the standard data mining for advertisement as a threat? And then what do they do with this threat list? Do they share it with law enforcement? And so the person just blowing off steam saying Facebook sucks, I wish they would all burn to the ground. You know, is that person now on a suspect list for actual law enforcement? Where does the line end? And I find that to be a very interesting prospect and also a little concerning as well, because the last thing I think we would want is corporate security assuming the role of what public security should be, aka local and federal law enforcement. So let me know what you think about that, but I thought that was absolutely both fascinating and terrifying at the exact same time. And in profit-sharing news, and I think you guys are going to find this one interesting because this involves Google, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we all know that if we're signed up for Facebook, Google, etc., they make their money primarily through advertising. They data mine the ever-living heck out of you in exchange for you using their free and very convenient services like social media platforms or free operating systems for our phones, etc., etc. But they take that data, they sell it to advertisers. Now, a question has been arise, and it's actually, I've never really seen this before, and it's coming out of the state of California. And so recently they had their state of the state, which is California's State of the Union address, and their governor basically said that he would like to create a profit-sharing system so that any Californian that, let's say, you know, is using Facebook, we'll just use Facebook as an example, when Facebook sells their data to a third-party advertiser, they should get a cut of the profit. So in other words, if they sell, you know, Facebook, if Facebook sells your data to an advertiser for $10, you'll get a dollar, you know, whatever that is. There was no real specifics, but I thought that was very interesting, in part because they have monetized who we are. They have monetized our data, they being the Facebooks, Googles, et cetera, of the world, and they are actually selling it. And so should we get a cut of that since it's our personal data that we are generating every time we post, like, share, check in, et cetera, you know, or do we already have a viable exchange of goods? We understand that we get to use things like social media that connects us with everybody, or Google products that gives us free email, you know, a free phone operating system, free GPS, free access to maps, et cetera, in exchange for this. And so California is taking it one step further than I've ever seen it take before. And I thought it was interesting because I don't necessarily know if this is the way, you know, we should be going in the world, but California seems to be going this way. California, interestingly enough, is also trying to put in their own advanced privacy protection that has essentially Silicon Valley freaking out because they don't want to deal with 50 independent states in the United States all saying, well, we're going to do our own privacy thing and you have to adhere to 50 different standards. They'd like a national one, probably one that they can lobby for and water down, but we will see where that goes. But back to the original point, should you be profit sharing with those companies that you're using their free services for as they data mine you? And I think a lot of people aren't necessarily aware that they're being data mined to the nth degree, as I've talked about over and over and over here on the radio show and on my videos and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, let me know. I think that's an interesting concept. And, you know, if that does come to fruition, you might be able to make a little bit of cash every time one of these companies makes a little bit of cash too. So take that for what it's worth. And in Y2K news, and yes, we are actually doing Y2K. And for the record, for those of you that don't know or are too young to know what Y2K is or didn't live through that, like, you know, some of us older folks did, Y2K is essentially this. In 1999, we went from 1999 to the year 2000, as we do every year. But this was a big thing because a lot of older computers, it was very, there was a big, huge concern on this, that a lot of older computers, instead of flipping over to January 1st, 2000, would actually flip over to January 1st, 1980 due to programming code and limitations in computers at the time. And if that was the case, we might see the shutdown of manufacturing facilities or things like air traffic control and on and on and on. So there was this massive push for Y2K readiness. And when Y2K came and went, it was pretty much nothing. I mean, it was a bit of a debacle in the sense that, you know, we have doomsday preppers building bomb shelters for the end of the world and, you know, people clearing out, you know, grocery stores, and then it came and went, and, you know, and that was it. I mean, we're still here today. I'm here talking to you in the year 2019, and, you know, the world didn't die and the sky didn't fall. But we actually have another Y2K coming up, and virtually nobody is talking about this, so here I am talking about it with you. On April 6, 2019, we may have a serious rollover problem for a lot of GPS. And the reason, and I'm not going to get into the technical details here, but the numbering system of how the GPS interacts might roll over to April 6, 1980, in the same way that we were expecting January 1st, 1980 to be Y2K. Now, this typically affects older GPS systems. So if you have, let's say, a new smartphone or your car, you know, as the last couple of years, it has already been adapted for that. But we have a lot of older infrastructure technology out there that is using GPS. And if those things aren't updated, they may start screwing up, stop working, display the wrong date, and therefore possibly the wrong position, and on and on and on. So it's kind of like a Y2K for the GPS industry, you know, and very few people actually know that this is a thing. So heads up, if you are a very heavy user of GPS and you have older GPSs around you, make sure that it's fully up to date, or else you might be living in 1980, at least according to your GPS. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin. And this week's breaches of the week, I think, is probably going to be the longest that I've ever done on the radio show. And it just seems like these data breaches continue to accelerate, and it's absolutely nuts. But since we just recently went through Valentine's Day, I thought we'd start with the Valentine's Day massacre and talk about the dating websites that have been hit or are reporting serious issues. And the first one that we're going to be talking about is a site called Coffee Meets Bagel, which I've never heard of before, but they have said that an unauthorized party gained access to their data. Now, they're also saying that no credit card or passwords were stolen, but obviously information on users were hit, and so they're asking everybody that uses Coffee Meets Bagel to change their passwords, etc. Number two, we're going to be talking about OKCupid. Now, many users have come out and said that basically hackers have been hitting their account, taking them over, and there's very little recourse in terms of getting these accounts back. Some have reported that, you know, the hackers have been contacting, you know, men or women or, you know, whoever the account holder is into, you know, with false stuff. Now, OKCupid decided to address this and basically said there has been no security breach whatsoever. Account takeover attempts are very common for websites like this. And if you're not properly securing yourself, then, you know, your account could be taken over. And that's pretty normal. They have also said that they have seen no spike in account takeovers, meaning, you know, if they're expecting 1,000 accounts a day to potentially be hit, they're not seeing 10,000 a day, etc. And so OKCupid is denying that they have a breach, even though there's been a lot of public buzz that users have been getting hit there. So take that for what it's worth. And those are your two data breaches related to Valentine's Day. And now we can get on to the rest of them. So the first one we're going to be talking about in terms of the rest of them is a website called 500px. Now, this is a photography website used by photographers, and they just basically went through all 14.8 million users and forced a password reset all of them. Now, they just discovered, or rather disclosed, a data breach about two, three weeks ago or so, from the time I am sitting here talking about this, that they got hit around July 5th or so. And so as a precaution, they are basically saying, well, all 15 million of our users, 14.8 million, have been affected, so let's just reset passwords for everybody. And so if you use 500px, heads up on that. Moving on, we are looking at PrintEZ. Now, this is an e-commerce site, and obviously for printing, they're based out of New York. And they noticed, they just notified that they had an e-commerce hit on their website, stealing obviously credit cards, et cetera, et cetera. And so if you have used their website from September 1st, 2016 to September 23rd, 2018, heads up on that, your credit card may be compromised. And I guess on September 23rd, 2018 is when they switched over to a new payment processing system on their site, which obviously ended the attack that they didn't know about. And so here we are. But if you have been a regular PrintEZ, and that is E-Z, not E-A-S-Y, PrintEZ, you know, heads up on that. Moving on, let's talk about Stanford University real quick. Now, they just had a data leak, and they exposed very interesting information. So if you are a student at Stanford University and you requested info from them via the Family Education Act, that's a U.S. act, and I think it's longer than that, but the abbreviation is Family Education Act, basically your information was exposed to hackers who stole virtually everything on you. This is legal status within the United States, aka your immigration status, criminal status, personal essays, all the information somebody would need to run an identity theft scam on you. So address, social security number, full name, etc., and on and on and on. And so if you go to Stanford University, or you're part of the Stanford University ecosystem and you're listening to this, heads up, guys, because you might want to check in and make sure that you have not been hit by this, if Stanford can even tell you that. Moving on, we are going to be talking about the game Fortnite. Now, Fortnite is probably the largest, if not one of the largest, video games or games on the planet right now that millions and millions are playing. And user forums have started to light up in the last couple of weeks, saying that user accounts have been breached and that those users that were breached should go check themselves to make sure that they haven't been. But here's the thing: for the millions and millions and millions of people that use Fortnite, they've put an odd number on it, saying 709 user accounts have been breached. And so what does that look like? Is that basically a breach due to the game that, you know, Fortnite and its developers found and immediately shut off? Is this a credential surfing attack, meaning they're just finding existing credentials, like in other words, usernames and passwords that those 709 have used somewhere else, and now they're using them to log into Fortnite? Not 100% sure, but if that unfolds and evolves into more, believe me, I will be telling you about that, you know, because that's interesting. I don't play Fortnite, but I know a ton of you out there do. Moving on, We're going to head to the United Kingdom real quick, and we're going to be talking about a website called Mumsnet. Now, this is a parenting website, presumably for mums or moms here in the United States, and they recently upgraded their system online, which actually let users of Mumsnet see other users' information. And so by virtue of that, Mumsnet reported themselves to basically the UK Cybersecurity Commission, whatever that official title is. I don't have it off the top of my head, because that is constitutes a data breach in the United Kingdom. And so if you are listening to this and you are a user of Mumsnet out in the UK, heads up on that, your data may have been exposed. Coming back into the United States, there is a national chain of restaurants called Huddle House. Now, to be fair, I had not heard of Huddle House before, so I went ahead and Googled them, and I was surprised to see that there are actually locations for this restaurant in the Chicagoland area where I am sitting talking to you, right now from, although I've never been there. They have claimed a data breach that basically said their third-party point-of-sale system was hit and the hackers gained remote access to the Huddle House networks by virtue of the point-of-sale system and were able to install malware into Huddle House locations. And so if you use, or not use, if you patron a Huddle House restaurant, one, let me know how the food is. I'd be curious. Two, your credit card might be hit. So there you go. Huddle House users, beware. Next, we are going to move on to a company that's based in South Carolina, but we're talking about their Indiana location, and they have probably the longest name ever for an organization I have mentioned, in Data Breaches of the Week, and that is the Roper St. Francis Healthcare and Valley Professional Community Health Center. That is a mouthful. Their Indiana location, they have now, by virtue of a HIPAA violation, disclosed that 13 of their employees fell victim to a phishing campaign, and between November 15th and December 15th of last year, hackers had access to that. So if you are using the Roper St. Francis Healthcare and Valley Professional Community Health Center in any way, shape, or form, heads up on that, your information may have been exposed. And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.